What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another Brand Doctor podcast. Today's podcast is staying in your lane. This is a big one, guys. And so I am happy to have Krista and Brett Brown from Blazing Glory back in the house to discuss this topic. This is a big one. I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of leaders tend to not really abide by this concept. And I'll be the first one to say that it is a very tough thing for me to do. So I could use myself as the subject matter here as, man, staying in my lane is very difficult for me. But before we get into that, I want to talk about how important it is to create the lane or design the lane first. Krista, you made such a good point earlier. You said, before we went live, you said, if you don't have lanes, then you're playing bumper cars. And I got that visual because I used to be a bumper car champion back in the day.
a carny.
He used to be a carny. Ram everyone off the road. Is that what you're saying?
and so let's talk about this because this is so important. I think any entrepreneur out there or any senior level exec or anybody in a leadership role could benefit from this. So let's talk about how to design the lane and create the lane first, and then we'll get into boundaries and figuring out what's the best way for leadership to stay in their lanes to get that big picture accomplished.
I love that you're starting with designing the lane because staying in your lane is sort of a misnomer. Because, I mean, to your point about the example of, like, you know, getting your hands dirty with everything, mm-hmm. right? I think you have to not stay in your lane.
Okay.
To some extent. And we talked about this a little bit before we went live about bringing your unique skill set to the job, right? Mm-hmm. When you're looking at a job, you want to match it. And when you're looking to fill a role, you're looking for people who match what you need. But I think there's a lot of talk lately when we talk about work culture, the shift from matching a culture versus a culture ad. And I don't know if that's a new concept. So for anybody listening, I will explain that. I think for a long time, like us old folk grew up hearing, you know, do you match the culture? So is it like in sync is I think how we all took it, right? Is it in sync with what you want? Do you vibe with it? Mm-hmm. Culture ad now takes out, it's not just about being in sync because especially in today's current situation, I think culture's all over the place. Mm. And with wanting diversity in terms of perspective, not just backgrounds, all of that, a culture ad is you looking to see if what unique stuff you bring to the table is making the culture better, right? And I think that same thing is still relevant in terms of staying in your lane. And it's why defining your lane is so important, because you need to define the lane of the role, but then you kind of need to redefine it when you find the right person to make sure it's accommodating both the person and the role to maximize what you guys are going to accomplish when it all comes together.
I like it. Brett, what are your thoughts?
I think, I think just real quick, this goes back to a few podcasts ago. I don't remember the title of it, but I'm sure we can put it in the show notes. But the one about, well, we talked about it a few times, strategy versus planning, but also just in general, like all the different ways a brand strategy can impact your actual business. Like a brand strategy being the same as business strategy. It's something I say all the time, right? But when Krista there was talking about making sure it's a, you know, good cultural fit, again, if your business doesn't have a good idea of who it is, why it exists, and what that cultural North Star is, you know, like then it's a ship without a rudder, right? Like if, or it's a, you know, you're out to sea without any sort of wayfinding, to stay with the North Star metaphor. But yeah, like that's the point though, is you don't know how to tell if somebody is right for the culture. You don't know how to make sure those lanes match up with what you're actually intending to build, because a lot of people, you know, have a great idea for a business product service, you know, even offering, like if you're even a podcaster, you have a great idea for great content that you're going to bring to the market, right? So the problem there is you might be really innovative in a silo for that thing, your distribution, your product, your, you know, storefront, your UI, your app design, your UX, your content itself, all that stuff. But then the business side of things is designed by, you know, a business school 101 textbook, right? And it has nothing to do with your business or anybody else's. Yeah, I think that to me is a really big thing. But I also think, yeah, staying in your lane is good and bad. Yeah, it, you know, a separate quick thought is dealing with a lot of startups, entrepreneurs, entrepreneurial people, leaders of businesses. A thing you notice a lot is people wear a lot of hats out of necessity, you know, just because survival instincts kick in, and you need to do your own marketing. You need to do your own social media, your own community management, your own, you know, if it's a restaurant, you're there bussing tables when you have to. If it's a newsstand, you're there working the cash register if an employee is sick. If it's, you know, if you're a creator and your editor, you know, has to go on leave for whatever reason, you're doing the edits. So examples like that are all examples of ways that people wear a lot of hats. But as you grow, sometimes you're used to doing things in a small, scrappy DIY way. And that can be really good because it's really agile. You have so much control over the outcome that you fall in love with that control itself, you know, which is great because it's great on one hand because you know you have an idea of different lines of the process, so you can speak to them and manage them really effectively. And you can see them in a way that some people can't. However, if you do fall in love with the control side of it, then it becomes micromanaging. You start taking on too much, and it, you know, and people are slow to give up those hats, to take those hats off that they started putting on and start really defining where they need support. Again, like you'll hear the old adage, and I think this is where I'll wrap and kick it back to you guys. But yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, you hear the old adage a lot, like some of the best leaders know what not to do. They know, they hire good people and they let them do their job and they stay out of their way. Mm-hmm. They empower the people that they've hired or trusted or work with, and they get out of their way, or they work with them and lean on them and leverage that expertise. They leverage that relationship and they build a relationship on trust and all of those things. And it's internally and externally. We see it as agencies all the time. Like, you know, having been in this business for this long, you see it all the time where clients at some point, if they stop trusting their creative partner or they try to lead the creative, then it's, you know, it's different than being collaborative.
Way right? different.
Yeah. And so again, I think to me, like that's where it gets interesting is staying in your lane is really a struggle for leaders to really find the nuance and set really clear boundaries between collaboration and control. What you want is collaboration. What you don't want is control. That's my thought.
Yes. All right. So this leads right into the second piece of this conversation and its boundaries, right? Control, collaboration. There's a fine line between the two, or there isn't, or people complicate it more than it should be. Man. So what is, so control, when I hear control, I think just dominating the conversation, dominating, just making people feel less than and taking the reins and just saying, shit, I could do this better on my own. I'm just going to do it myself. That's where I see control. And I might be embellishing a little bit here, but collaboration, it's more of a, all right, let's sit down collaboratively. Let's sit down, whether it's virtual or in person, in a round table. So we're all looking at each other. And let's take this goal and let's start working together, because I may know some things that you don't. You know things that I don't. You come from a different background than I do. And that's what makes this world unique. That's what makes it awesome, right? Now we're all working together on this one thing and all these different perspectives. Now, again, you have to control this. Otherwise, it can get crazy out of hand. So that's where I think this structure comes in place, right? You know, it's crazy. Not to go off on a quick tangent here, but I've been tuning in to every month for the past 6 months. I've been tuning in to the Cannabis Regulatory Commission's meetings for the state, because we're going for our license and we're waiting to get our license. And the structure of these meetings, you know, you go to any town hall meeting or council meeting, they have the structure, right? And it sounds so ridiculous, but man, it really keeps things on rails. So having that structure is key. So just getting back to the collaboration versus control, I think when you try to control to a point where other people start to feel like, why are they there? That's where we can run into some problems.
Mm. Well, I think that's the key to me, the difference between it. There, your definitions of control and collaboration, I think, are accurate, but only one part of how it can manifest, right? I think the outcome that you described that comes from control, people feeling like they don't belong there. There's no value to what they're bringing to the table. It's not being seen as valuable. And now maybe it is, but they don't feel like it because somebody's not relinquishing control, right? Control can be, I've done the report 5 times and it's not quote unquote correct. And that's because, you know, Joe is looking for the report to be the way he used to do it. And he only ever showed me one report. And I've always done it. You're not valuing the different perspective because you're so used to it being your way that you it's just wrong versus, well, let's talk about what's working and what's not, right? There's no dialogue to explain it, discuss it, train, whatever it is that's going to have all the perspectives brought to the table. But collaboration, while yes, it can be everybody working on a thing, it doesn't have to be. Because that can also be limiting depending on the size of your business. Again, the scrappy team versus building a structure for everyone, right? So collaboration is one, I think you touched on, I'm not going to open this can of worms, I'm going to keep us focused, but diversity on teams, right? That's a whole other, I mean, that's hours of conversation. but having different perspectives on the team, knowing that that's what you're hiring for, so that not everybody thinks the same thing. That's the culture add, right? Do I have people who think differently who are coming to the table to do these jobs? Or is everybody, I'm looking for this one thing and I only hire this one type of person, right? That's going to limit you. But once you have all that in place, collaborating is, Joe used to do the reports and now he's managing the department. And Rebecca is now the person he brought in. When she does the report, she gets to take you through the report, have that discussion. It doesn't have to be everyone across departments, but also in your processes. Where do, let's keep it in the creative field, where do creative and strategy meet? Where's the overlap? Where's not? And I think if we're going to go back to the staying in your lane road metaphor, street metaphor, whatever you want to call it, then the way you transition that, because it gets muddy, right? Where do you put up the boundaries of the lane? Do they change? What happens? I think we have to start looking at what roads actually do. You're driving on one type of highway at a certain size of business. So maybe it is, you're a town with one freeway and there's five lanes, and those are your five. You wear all the hats and you're watching out for each other so you can change lanes when you need to. Mm-hmm. As you grow, that highway intersects with another highway because now you have departments. So each of those lanes has a department name on it, and they spew off into the interstate that has its own set of lanes, right? And those are your experts within your department. So now we're building this whole infrastructure of roadways to go across a bigger span of land. Span, not spanned. That was awful. So yeah, I think you have to start looking at engineering highways from there and more elaborate systems of taking things from one place to another. If you want to keep the metaphor making sense, right?
I love it. Brett, just to put you on the spot, baby.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm gonna be very talking to this Friday.
Oh,
so
me too.
You've been warned. Stop, happy to do it.
I love it.
I don't know how much more I have to elaborate on it, just because it's tough, right? Like it's always tough whenever you're defining these roles. I think really what it helps. I mean, just to continue that point is like, you know, it's all sort of enmeshed, right? Like it's all of these things are enmeshed in building a business. And, you know, I'm going to stay in my lane when I talk about, you know, what I love to do is shape organizations from the inside out. So like a big part of what we do sometimes is organization design, you know, and that is why we geek out on these structural talks. It's not because we're over here trying to teach businesses how to business. I think what it is how to business in a way where the actions you take become a function of marketing, right? Everything you do becomes proof of your brand promise, becomes an action that your brand is taking, not for the purposes of like, oh, we're doing this because we want to make an ad, da 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 da. Like you're doing this because it makes sense for the company. And so there's a lot of things when you look at it from a creative lens, and it's sort of why, you know, one of the most undervalued things when we talk about leveraging creative partners like us here is, yeah, dude, creative can be a force of change in profound ways that businesses still are understanding how to tap those things, right? Again, like when you take people who are very good at advertising and branding and, you know, strategy and, you know, certain facets of things, and you put them in places where you wouldn't typically see them, like, you know, looking at the structure of a company, looking at how benefit policies roll out, looking at how office layouts happen, looking at, you know, how often people are or not at the office. Like, again, like all those things, when you have, if you're in the fortunate position to have creatives that are flexible enough to go across all those different mediums, but also if you have a partner that you really trust and really enjoy working with, put them in those places. I think so that's first thing, you know, I'm going to stay in my lane. I just want to be cognizant of that. But, you know, the other side of it, too, is like, again, all this is enmeshed, right? Like the only way you ever get to a very good definition of roles and responsibilities is by first understanding what your product is. The only way you can fully understand how you create that product is to, you know, lay out the process and improve it and refine it and design it around, you know, why you do this thing. Again, like everything is reasoned back to this is why the company was founded. You know, an interesting thing that personally I love to do whenever we work on new brands that have been existing or big brands is, you know, talk to people. How many people know their founding story? If the business has been around for a long time and it's changed hands a few times, if there's a, you know, a board now, but do you know the founding story? If it's just you, are you able to articulate your founding story really succinctly? You know, I challenge people listening, pause, think about it. What is your founding story? How would you describe it to me if you know, we're on an elevator ride up, you know, we're going upstairs and there's other people in the elevator. But yeah, you want to just quickly tell me, oh yeah, this is someone offhandedly asks you, oh, so how did you get into this line of business or how did this company come about? Oh, cool story behind that. It actually started because we wanted to solve blank, or really we saw an opportunity to blank, right? And sometimes in there's a gem that helps you unlock why you're here, you know, that really reminds you and gets you back home. This is why we do it. Then you write that down. If anybody found anything interesting when they try that exercise, write it down, put it on the wall, and now go through your org, go through your roles that you've outlined, go through your process, look at your distribution models, look at the way you do marketing, the way you approach it, the way you have budgets. Cool. Look at that gem alongside your goals. What do you want to do in 2023? What do you want to do when the year kicks off?
So important.
And,
so
you know, important. Wherever those two things collide, you're going to have an opportunity to create change from within that people are going to get excited about the way that they got excited when your business first took off.
You know, you mentioned the why are you here is so important because I'm reading the book right now. What the hell is it called?
Why are you here?
The Third Circle. No,
I was close.
It's called The Third Circles. It's Pagemon. Pagemon's book. Pagemon is.
But Henry, what are the first two circles?
I'm 20 pages into the book. Relax.
So unfocused today.
I just want to derail this whole conversation a little bit.
I'm just here to throw firecrackers into the room.
Right. Chris is good at that.
That's typically my job. That's my lane. Thank you.
You're good at that. You're good at that.
I'm having a fun Friday. Go with it.
Oh man, I love it. I love it. But the why are you here thing, right? A why are you here point. So this book, again, 10 pages in, and it says the author's explaining that when you get a better understanding of what that is, then you start to see things in the through your lens of life that you might not be seeing when that question is not top of mind. And basically the question is, well, why do some people achieve these great lengths of success, and why do some other people don't? Why are some people just make it look so easy, and why do other people always look like they could never catch a break? And his argument is that self-awareness plays a lot to that, but when they understand why they're doing what they're doing, they see more opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take action on that opportunity, and that's what gets them there. It's not a luck thing. It's not he's more well off.
Also a relentlessness.
That too, right? That too.
Because they don't see the missed opportunity or the opportunity that didn't win, supposedly,
right,
as the failure and the end of it,
right?
They see all the opportunities, and then they take the chance everywhere they can take the chance.
Yeah.
Until it happens.
And then it goes,
I think you meant it fail harder on one of our conversations.
And that's how it works. Like it's not rocket science when you break it down like that. Right.
I mean, funny enough, it kind of is. I mean, it goes back to thinking like an engineer, you know, approaching it like an engineer, where it's, you know, you have to, I mean, look at the scientific method is like, you know, you have to go back to that about, you know, have an idea, have a hypothesis, go out there and put it in practice, test it, watch how it does or does not succeed, and learn from both of those things equally. Right. It's the only way, like that's literally how R&D, innovation, all that stuff happens. It's how creative happens. Krista and I were having a talk earlier in the week about, you know, why so many creatives skip a lot of young creatives right now, because, you know, things like Canva and tools are getting so much more accessible earlier, and people are getting so good at the actual programs. And you can do so many flashy things in the programs so much sooner.
It's easier to make it look like you made something.
Yeah. But, you know, what you do is you hit a wall really quickly, because either the idea is really surface level, or, you know, the foundation to have a really broad language of visual or tonal, like whether you're a copy or art side, or both, you know, like, you know, a lot of those things end up falling by the wayside. And that's because, yeah, agencies don't talk about how many bad scripts it takes to get to one good commercial that you see, how many bad campaign platforms people go through. I've gone through literally like,
half, I don't think you can count
reams, like reams and reams of paper of sketches and write-ups and ideas, you know, rounds in, you know, in the 20s and 30s of just revisions, or, you know, again, ideas, especially when you're looking at like Super Bowl campaigns and everybody's eyes are going to be on it. There's all these different approval layers, both at the agency and at the client, and, you know, regulatory, like all these other things. And there's a million different parts moving, because it's a fully integrated campaign that's going to run on TV, social, you know, digital, out of home, right? All the, like everywhere you might say experiential. We're going to make merch, we're going to do music on Spotify and whatever. But like, all these different things that you might do, all these different channels, like each of those needs a great execution that falls out of a larger great idea. And to get there, it takes so much, you know, thinking and so many rounds and revisions. And it's the same thing for business. And again, I'm not saying that to be like, you know, to really like love the struggle and work yourself to the bone until you can't see.
No,
right?
That's bullshit.
But what I'm saying is, don't expect to get it right immediately. Don't give up if it doesn't. What I'm saying is, if you struggle to answer that first question about what my founding story is, try again. Say it again. Say it to somebody else. See if you phrase it different.
Or write it. One of the things that, yeah, when I write, things come out of my head that would never come out of my head if I've said it. It's weird. It's really weird. So
remember the advice I gave you a while ago when we were having a talk similar to this was, cool. Record yourself.
Mm.
Yep. Record yourself saying it as if you said it to yourself, and then listen to it a day or two later. You know, something different. You're going to hear it differently.
Oh, totally.
You might learn something, or you might correct yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times have I done that to myself?
I'm going to listen to this podcast back and be like, oof, what was that guy talking about?
I had plenty of those.
Anytime I hear me talking. So yeah. You know.
That's Brett, you mean?
Yeah, no, not about Brett, but about myself.
I'm only kidding.
Yeah, funny conversation.
One thing
I
don't want to lose, and I'm probably going to lose it trying to remember it now by making a window for it. What was it? Oh my goodness. Oh, in doing this exercise that we've talked about of figuring out like what's your story of why you did it, I think the one gem that the three of us can provide to people in that. Mm-hmm. The one freebie we'll give you of the hard-earned expertise we have is it's probably not going to be the first thing that you say. And what I mean by that is when you are asked, how did the company start? Brett had a nuance in there later on about why did you get into this? The why you got into this is usually closer than the story you have trained yourself to tell people about how the business started.
I like that.
You are going to probably start with, well, I started the business 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it's been, 15 years ago, maybe, right? When blah, 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 it's going to be very dry and functional. Mm-hmm. You're going to write it like a history book lesson and you're going to think you have it down. That's not the heart of your business.
No.
It wasn't, you ran, yes, maybe you ran into a friend and that's, and the two of you decided to start it. Sure. That's still the frosting on the cake. You're not in the cake yet. Right. So sorry, I'm throwing metaphors all over the place today that may or may not make sense to you.
I'm like ducking.
I'm still back on the bumper cars.
It's a fun Friday. So now we'll jump into cake.
I'm driving a cake. I'm driving right through a cake
with my bumper,
bumper car.
But yeah, I think, you know, why? Like if I'm going to use a friend's example that I used to work with. Business guy was a general manager at a retirement home. He actually came from restaurants. He switched to elder care because when his mother when his mother hit a certain age, she needed care. And he wasn't fully happy with the options he was seeing. So he moved into that industry so he could start making an impact there. Now, he didn't start his own business, but had that been the case, it's not just I started it because my mom needed elder care. It's I didn't like what I was seeing in the business, right? And I didn't know it before my mom got there. So yes, it's part of it is his mother. But I would argue a deeper part of that is when he sees something that needs more care, he wants to help fix it so that the care is there. And I think he brings that to everything he does. So now he's now in like Airbnb side of real estate, right? That heart is still there.
Yeah.
That's the business he started, right? He turned his house into like a bed and breakfast type thing.
My wife.
And that drive is what I still see being the heart of his business now. And what makes people sign up for him is he wants to make their stay there better. It's you might've thought it was just the mom, but there's a deeper thing there. It happened to be that his eyes were opened to the need because of his mom. But it's the drive that the care was not adequate. So how do I take what I'm doing and make that better? So he's a caring person. So that's what I'm saying. It's a little bit of a reframing that you might not see. It's hard when we turn the lens to ourselves. Think about when you have to write a bio for yourself, right?
Ugh.
How many times do any of us go, hey, friend, coworker, who I'm, you know, like that I'm working with all the time. Can you write down a couple bullets
yeah.
or, hey, do you mind writing like a paragraph for me or look this over, whatever it is?
Yeah.
I'm sure some of you out there just ask people that's a tip that they give you, right? Like have your best friend write it or something to like get you out of your own head because we don't like to, it's not that we don't like to, but it's hard to acknowledge things. We take a lot of the things that we do and that people love about us and what drive us for granted because it's just what we do.
Yeah.
So I think write the story down and then in there say, but why did I do this? And then kind of look at both of them and see what comes out of it.
Yeah, I think that self-awareness is really going to help you stay in that lane of yours that you need to stay in and be conscious of the collaborative approach versus the controlled approach and all the things that we talked about today. I think that's what it comes down to. Like, when you really take some time to just think about what you've done, what you haven't done yet, is this a good use of your time? Are you passionate about it? Is this part of, is this going to help you drive why you're here? Right? Tying everything, I'm just trying to tie everything together that we talked about today. Because I think at the end of the day, the more self-aware we are, the better communicators we become, the better leaders we become, and it's a win-win, in my opinion, for everybody involved, for everybody involved. And again, I'll go back to that one quote that I got from Danny Meyer's book, Setting the Table. He said something along the lines of, when people understand that the change is for them, that's when they buy in. That's when they buy in. And it's not happening to them. That, you know, mm-hmm. That's the difference. And I think that's it. I'll leave with one little story. We're working on the employee guides for one of the venues that's going to be opening up, and it's basically the training manual for everybody that works there, right? And it was a 31-page document. The designer was like dreading it because he was like, man, this is so big and it's so lofty and I got to get this done in 2 days. And, you know, he was really dreading it, but he did a phenomenal job. I just let him be. I knew that he was stressed, but I said, let him just bang it out and I'll see what it looks like at the end. And we got it back and everybody was raving about it. And I kind of just stood reserved because I just wanted to let everybody get their excitement out. And I didn't even respond to the email thread. I actually pulled them aside on our project management platform. And I said, are you open to some suggestion? And he said, as long as it doesn't mean I have to redo the whole thing, yes. And I said, absolutely. I said, no. I said, you did a phenomenal job. I said, I remember doing these back in the day, and yes, they're lofty. But here's where I think this thing could be that much better. And you know what it came down to? It came down to font size and line spacing. That's it. Everything he nailed. But that those two little details was line spacing and font size. And he said, dude, you know what? I was thinking the same damn thing, but I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to get it done on time. So I just fired it out. And I said,
the compromise he felt he had to make.
Yeah. And I said, so then he came back to me 10 minutes later and he goes, what font size and spacing do you like? 21 or 20 or 20 or 18? And I go, 18. I said, see how the words could breathe now on the page and it makes it so much easier to read. So he goes, all right, I'm not going to be able to finish 31 pages tonight. But I said, he said, you'll have it with your morning paper. And sure enough, I woke up and I was eating breakfast and boom, email came, updated version was shot out. And he even put in the email, which I loved, he didn't have to do this, but he was like, here's the revised manual based on Henry's suggestion. I've made some edits to the spacing and font size, and now it's so much easier to read. And done.
Good team player.
Right.
That's a good team player, though. He acknowledged that it wasn't all him.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you showed him support, too, right? Yeah. Like, you gave him, and you gave him the time he needed. So I think that's an awesome story of collaborating and building lanes, because you don't build the roads so that you have a road. You build the road so that drivers can drive on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what he said at the end?
It's all about empowering people.
At the end of the story, I said, you know, this job's wrapped up. It's done. You know what he said? He goes, man, it's awesome to have somebody that's just as knowledgeable in design and layout because you speak my language. And, but not only that, you see things that I see. You know, you or sometimes I don't see, which nobody else on the team would have called out font size and spacing, right? And I said, that's what I'm here for, you know? So I wanted to share that story because there's a couple other things there too. I'll just point out, you know, I asked him, are you open to suggestion? Instead of just saying, this is what I would have done. You know, there's how you say it, right? And I'm a work in progress. My wife always yells at me. She's like, you don't realize half the shit that comes out of your mouth sometimes. It's rough, right? And I was like, I get that from you. No. But I think just being conscious of how you communicate that, it's going to go a long way. It's going to go a long way.
I mean, it's situational awareness, right? Because I think in the role where you are now, he is both responding to having a mentor figure, somebody who's been in his line of work, because you are in a system that he doesn't have like a creative director over him, mm-hmm. who's going to push the work farther, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you were right to say, hey, are you open to this? But at the same time, you're giving him that structure when it's not there. So he's not just operating blind. I mean, to any creatives listening, how fun is it when you're like, hey, I solved it. And like, yeah, you're not going to always see it,
yeah.
right? But you're operating in the dark when you're the only one solving it on some of these projects, right? So I think from that regard, there are systems where you are waiting for the feedback to come from somebody who speaks your language and is in your system of hierarchy, mm-hmm. versus working either in-house on a small team or for a client that's, you know, you're working directly with them, yeah. that when they give their feedback, it's not from the same perspective. So what they're seeing isn't articulated necessarily. It's our joke of make the logo bigger, right? Oh, what you're actually, you're not, yes, you think the answer is make the logo bigger. That's why you're asking me for that. Yeah. What you're actually saying, you have to do that translation of, oh, the logo's getting buried in this particular layout. So maybe I need to move it. Or, you know, you want that to be more of a focal point.
Right.
Maybe it's make it bigger, maybe it's not. But the only way that somebody outside of what we do can articulate is I want the logo bigger,
yeah.
right? Or put it in the middle or whatever right. it is, right? They try and get it solved. Right. So I think it's a nice example for this of you're setting up the lanes for people of look, we don't have this, but you can leverage me in this way.
Yeah.
Hey. You know, here's how it works with the group. Here's how it works with me and you directly. Here's how this project might work and where you're going to have more room.
Yeah. Yeah. What a great conversation, guys. You know, I'm really enjoying these podcasts, and I hope you guys stick around for some future episodes. I'm excited to keep these. I love this flow. I love these conversations. I love all the different perspectives that we share. And I'm hoping that you guys out there that are listening, do too. And, if you are, make sure that you drop a review or screenshot this and tag us in a post on Instagram or Facebook or wherever the hell you're at and on Insta on social and let us know. You know, we
let us know if we should talk more about cake
and bumper cars. So
we'll have to do one episode from a carnival.
Oh my God. Oh my God. My son would love that one. My son would love that one.
I'll take all the kids.
There you have it, guys. We will catch you on the next episode soon. Take care. God bless. And we'll catch you on the next one.